Hello and welcome to the Intentional Manifestation Podcast, where we talk about all of the things that help us to manifest an aligned life that's beyond our wildest dream. My name is Megan, and I'm your host for this podcast. I use neuroscience, epigenetics, somatics, energetics, and holistic nutrition to help my clients completely shift their perspective so they can transform their life. To align your life with your dreams, check out my self-paced coaching program that also gives one-on-one coaching support. For just $47 per month, cancel anytime. You can find the link in the description.
Mindset is everything, but let's face it, very few people actually have the tools to make lasting change. Enter the Highest Self Academy. We use neuroscience to dive deep into the subconscious mind, helping you to let go of the limiting beliefs holding you back and to rewire your mind for success. The best part, it's only $47 a month with the flexibility to cancel anytime, and you get a 7-day money-back guarantee. Oh, and here's an exclusive offer just for our podcast listeners. Find the link in the show notes to get $10 off your membership each month. So what are you waiting for? Dive in and start your journey to a better you today. Hello, hello, welcome back. If this is the first time you are joining us, welcome. Today on the podcast, I am so excited to introduce you to Namisha. She is a former surgeon turned stay-at-home mom who transitioned into the online space after discovering mindfulness. She shares her journey of being a high-energy, non-meditative person to embracing mindfulness after a health and emotional crisis. Tune into the episode to learn how she shifted her perspective and how that led her to align her with the life of her dreams. Let's dig in. And why don't you just start by introducing yourself, tell us who you are, what you do, and kind of how you got into this space.
So I'm Namisha, and I'm actually a surgeon by professional training, but COVID forced me to become a stay-at-home mom, which I was very glad to do, actually, because I'd been trying to balance a six-month-old baby with all the stress and the heavy schedule of surgery, and it wasn't working out. I just wanted to be home with my baby. So it's 4 years since I've been at home, and since last year, I entered the online space because I've been practicing mindfulness for a really long time now. In 2016 is when I got introduced to mindfulness. And before that, I was this completely, I'm not the meditation type of person. Like, please do not even suggest that to me. And a lot of people did actually suggest it to me because I'm just naturally a very energetic, very hyper kind of person, like very, very high strung. So people used to constantly tell me, maybe you want to calm down. And I used to be like, no, I like my edgy personality. Like, I like the way I am. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to do this. And then I had a bit of a health plus emotional crisis and I couldn't get into work anymore. So that's how I started practicing mindfulness. And it was great. I was able to go back to surgical work. So this was 2016 and I was practicing mindfulness. And then I kind of fell off the bandwagon a bit. And then people, you know, especially my family would tell me, are you meditating? Because you're really angry today. So then I would, you know, stomp off to my room resentfully and meditate for a while. And then all would like kind of settle. So I was kind of using meditation, mindfulness meditation as like an anger pill. Like you have anxiety pills, anti-anxiety pills. I was using it like an anti-anger pill. And then I had my baby. And we all know as moms, emotions get really heightened. There's so much joy, but there's also so much else that comes up. And then there's the sleep deprivation. And then just my normal practice wasn't cutting it. And that's when I really dove deep into mindfulness. And that's when I decided, when I entered the online space as a coach and as a teacher, I said, my focus has to be mindfulness and taking mindfulness to people, especially people who may not necessarily be the meditation sort.
I love that. I love that you really just followed your journey into it. And even though people were saying like, hey, you should do this, you weren't ready for it yet. But then as soon as you, like, you had it and you were like, okay, time. Like, the timing of everything is like perfect, right? And so you weren't ready for that yet. And then
yeah,
with your baby, you were like, okay, it's time for me to like get into this for real. And so what would you consider like the definition of mindfulness?
Well, so there's the textbook definition, and that's like non-judgmental awareness of the present moment. And it makes so much sense And I always have like this issue with this definition because it's a factual definition, but I just don't like negative words very much. So for me, mindfulness is an equation. It's self-awareness plus self-compassion. That's mindfulness in a nutshell. So kind of if you flip it from that passive, non-judgmental awareness to something more active, then that's the way I like to look at it.
Yeah.
So it's just awareness plus compassion.
Yeah, I love that because as humans, we judge. Like we're human and we judge things, and that doesn't make it bad to have a fleeting thought that says like, oh, I had this thought. But you're right. It's the awareness to be like, okay, I did judge that situation. Why? Why was I triggered by that? Or why did I judge that person? And then to turn inwards and be like, what does that mean? And that, right, is mindfulness, is being aware of why you're feeling certain ways. And then, as you said, self-compassion and being able to say, okay, that's, you know what, I'm human. I know I had a nasty thought about somebody. I'm human. And I actually don't mean that or think that, or I'm going to try to think differently about that person or see their situation in a different way, right?
Yes, exactly, exactly. Because we're always judging things. And then if we judge ourselves for judging things, then you're just going to go down a really slippery slope. And so I think it's best to start with awareness. And then that awareness can shine a light on your needs. Then you have that self-compassion where you meet your needs. And then that self-compassion spills out into compassion for other people, which is true compassion, which is not, you know, people-pleasing or fawning or, you know, putting up a show or I have to be nice, but it's genuinely coming from this place of having met your own needs. So that's kind of how I see the flow of it.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that's the thing too, is that everybody has their own model of reality and their own experiences that they go through. And we're not privy to that. You know, we're not inside their head. And no matter what or how well you think you know somebody, like even your spouse and your partner, like you might think that you know everything about them and still you don't understand the way that they see things or why they see things a certain way. But it's okay to also be like, I know that they've had these experiences and that they see things differently from me. And that's okay. And then being able to look at strangers that maybe you don't agree with and say, okay, well, I can kind of see where their opinion comes from, right? And, you know, it's that gray zone, I call it. I've always lived in the gray zone. Like so many people are like, things are like black or they're white. And it's like, there's a gray zone. Like you can be able to be where you are and see both sides of things and not fully agree with either.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Actually, I was going to interrupt you and say, I've always been that person who's been like, okay, so this is true. And this is also true. And, you know, being able to play in that space between both the truths, knowing that they are, you know, that reality is somewhere a mishmash between the two and also more than both the truths, so much more than we can see and understand.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. It's like an,
I resonate.
Yeah, it's like an example, like every kid show, there's always an episode where you see one person's version of the truth and the next person's version of the truth. And then they show you like what really happened. And then they can understand like, oh, wait, actually, we both have our own versions. But there's also a outside opinion where they saw both things happening that didn't affect them. And like, that's life in a nutshell.
Yeah.
So funny. And so you mentioned that you have a journal with some journal prompts in the podcast form. And I was just wondering if you wanted to like chat about that at all, if you have it off the top of your head. If not, that's totally okay. But if there's some like prompt.
Yes, I actually do. So when I became a mom, I'm like this huge nerd. So I was the mom who read all the books while she was pregnant and who practiced nappy folds and all kinds of weird things that I did. So the one thing I did was suddenly join, like until then, I didn't even know what Facebook groups were, except if I had them for work. But then I joined like a ton of Facebook groups, and there were like gentle parenting groups, attachment parenting groups, like clot diapering groups, breastfeeding groups. So I was in all of these groups. And even though they had, you know, a particular focus, there would be all these stories about people, you know, about moms speaking up about their mental health issues, you know, with new babies or with the second baby on the way. And invariably, you know, someone would say, why don't you try mindfulness or why don't you try meditation? And it was amazing to me how many people would say, I can't meditate, I have anxiety. Like, I can't do this, you know, I have anxiety. And also people were conflating mindfulness and meditation. So when I got into the online space, I said, the first thing I want to do is kind of debunk this myth that you have to meditate to practice mindfulness. And what I say, if you're a person who's used to meditating, if you look at my prompts, a lot of them are going to be maybe what you call meditation, since you meditate. I know you are. And I would also, but a lot of people wouldn't call that, you know, you could call it exercises, you could call it practice, you could like strip away the parts of it that you don't like and just get to the basic essence of it. And so in those prompts, I try to give people this a 2-minute guidance on things that they can do. So a lot of people say that they have anxiety and they can't focus on their breath. So then I'm like, okay, you know, we can do breath focus meditation, but you can focus on your chest or the movement of your chest, or you can focus on the movement of your belly, like place your hands on the belly and just do it for 5 minutes to start with. You don't need to close your eyes and you don't need to, you know, only focus on your breath. So I've given other prompts for kindness and self-compassion, with mindfulness in nature, mindfulness through your senses. And so I kind of think that's a very easy way to start, because although I'm saying 5 minutes, most of the prompts are like they take 2 minutes to read and probably 2 minutes to do. So I kind of feel it's a nice way for people to ease themselves in. And then even if you're used to mindfulness and meditation, like I turn to them all the time throughout the day because I'm a busy mom and I'm trying to run an online business. And I'm also trying to get back to my surgical work. And sometimes all I have is 2 minutes, and that's okay. You can start where you are and you can do what you can, and it's still going to count. So, yeah, so that's called the Daily Mindful Moments Journal. And there's a place in it for self-reflection and stuff. But there are these 5 basic prompts, which, you know, don't make it very, very spiritual, religious or woo in any way. It kind of makes it very exercise oriented, and you can do it as you wish. So I'd love to like share a link with you if you kind of put it in your notes.
Yeah, absolutely.
People can check it out.
Definitely, we'll put it in the show notes for sure. And, you know, I think it's so interesting because I wouldn't consider mindfulness and meditation the same at all, because yes, you don't need, like, meditating is its own practice, which is an amazing practice. And it's so great for, you know, just giving yourself the space to like get your inspired downloads and that sort of thing, and to listen and to hear what you need to do next, right? It's really great for your intuition. But that intuition and mindfulness are not the same thing, right? Like, yes, you want to be mindful so that you can use your intuition, but then they're not interchangeable. Yeah. They kind of work together. They're not interchangeable. And to be mindful, all you need is that awareness. And when you meditate, you can be more open to awareness, but they're not like the same thing. And not everybody can meditate. I mean, everybody can meditate. Some people feel like they can't meditate, is what I mean by that. And for me, it's like when I started meditating, it was very weird. Like before I became certified, I didn't believe in manifestation. I was like, yeah, sure, okay, whatever. to meditate, like I was like, okay. I actually remember there was like maybe the year before, 2 years before I became certified in my modalities, I was meditating just because I felt that it made me more calm. Like overall, I was able to regulate my nervous system a lot better by just doing regular meditation. And that for me was just laying on the bed and listening to like some calming music or some solfeggio frequencies, and just really taking time to myself to just be with me. And it wasn't necessarily like anything weird. It was just giving myself that time. I wasn't listening for anything at that time. It wasn't that sort of meditation. It was just, yeah, really focusing on calming myself and my nervous system. I don't remember really where I was going with that thought, but that's for me.
That mindfulness and meditation are they're not the same thing.
Yeah. And so for me, I feel like I've always been a fairly mindful person just because I've always been in that gray zone. But really for me, what started my mindfulness path, like really getting into like that self-awareness, was working through getting rid of limiting beliefs and being able to see another person's point of view a lot better and see the way the world actually works and not the way people tell us it works. And I think that's a big thing as well.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yes, it is. I completely agree with you, you know, because I meditate, like I have a spiritual meditation practice as well. And I know that it's separate for me from my mindfulness practice, but my mindfulness is like the foundation of it all for me. So I kind of see it like this foundational thing, because you, so many people, you know, sometimes we're just sleepwalking through life. Mm-hmm. Like even I used to think I was a fairly aware person, you know, I was always interested in psychology even as a kid. But even then, there are so many things, you know, that you just take for granted because you're not questioning it. And they feed into your limiting beliefs. Like it's like as if you're looking through these, not dirty, but maybe foggy lenses, then everything's going to look like it's foggy outside. But this gives you this opportunity to clear up your lens and have this awareness of what's actually happening in the present moment. And that's why I like to ground mindfulness in the body. I'm very huge on body scans and the five senses meditation for people who can't do body scans, because I've realized even that gets people panicked, you know, putting that inward attention on what's happening in my toes, what's happening in my feet, what's happening in my legs. It can be quite, I don't know. One of my friends described it as claustrophobic. So I was like, oh my God, I do not want you to have that experience. So why don't you start with, where can I feel my body in contact with other things, like my feet on the ground and my thigh on the chair and my back against the headrest and, you know, those kind of things. And then go to your 5-4-3-2-1, you know, your five things that you see, four things that you hear, three things that you smell, three things that you hear, four things that you touch, three things that you hear, two that you smell, one that you taste. And I think 5-4-3-2-1 is always so great for when you're having anxiety that you can't loop out, that, you know, you're looping in, or especially you have intrusive thoughts. But even otherwise, like I find people say, when you're angry, take a deep breath. Oh my God, no. If you tell me to take a deep breath when I'm angry, I will literally explode. It's like as if I'm on simmer and you've like turned the heat on and I'm just going to boil. And I found out that it's fairly common when I spoke to other people. They're like, yes, we just can't do it. You know, we can't do this deep breath thing. So I was like, okay, then can you feel your feet on the ground? That works really well for me, especially if I'm on a carpeted surface where I can feel the texture with my toes. Or, you know, feeling something with my fingers also helps, like the wooden desk or, you know, that wall, anything which is texturing. Or sound helps for me. Listening to distant sounds, even if it's traffic, even if it's not, you know, natural, pleasant sound. Sometimes even the sound of nearby construction. It just brings me back to the present moment, away from my emotion. So yeah, I think that's where how mindfulness works for me. It kind of helps me come back into my body and not stay so heady. A lot of my awareness used to be heady. Mindfulness, especially the postpartum mindfulness, like really going deep into it, it brought me back into my body. Otherwise, for the first 3 years, I was just doing breath focus meditation and it was just like in, out, mind wanders, bring it back. But I was still very much in my head. And like I said, it was like an anti-anger pill for me. It sounds funny, but it was literally like that. My mom would look at me, Namisha, have you meditated today? And I would be like, no, mom. And I was 30 at this time. Okay, so you can imagine how humiliating it was that I would go off and meditate and come back calmer. And then I would be like, what is wrong with me? Like, people can maintain that tempo just like that. And I'm this person who needs to like go away and sit for 15 minutes breathing before I can be calm. So it kind of fed into, you know, like shame and like there's something wrong with me, that feeling. But when I brought it to the body and when I brought in self-compassion, that those were the game changers, I think.
Yeah.
So I think that's the other thing. People use it for anxiety and anger, but sometimes, you know, you don't see what other gifts there are in mindfulness if just this one part of it has been working for you.
Yeah, I think that makes so much sense. And I love that exercise too, the 5-4-3-2-1. It is. I was going to say, it brings you right back into your body. And then it's like, oh yes, I'm here. I'm human. I'm feeling these things. It's okay. And it just takes you out of, yeah, those feelings and emotions that can be very overwhelming. For me, I'm not like an explosive person, so I don't get that very often. But like for me, it's, you know, it's actually not so much anymore. But for a little while, I guess when my daughter was younger, it would be very like overstimulated. There was some time where I was just like, okay, the TV was on, the kitchen fan is on, the dog is barking, I'm trying to make dinner. And it's like, oh my God, like I just can't handle this because there's just so much going on. And yeah, for me, it's taking that breath, but it's like that big, like I'm going to stimulate my vagus nerve breath. But then I have the awareness of that, oh, right? I'm not just going, which is what most people do when you tell them to take a deep breath. If they're angry, that's not the right kind of breath. That's like that heady breath. Like you want like a from the belly, like calm your vagus nerve breath, right? And only can you do that when you're in the awareness of knowing that like, okay, I'm going to take a moment and like That's like a grounded breath, right? Like from the ground up, you're okay, I'm going to hold it and then let it go. And yeah, like there's nothing worse than being told to like calm down like that when you're like freaking out. And if it's like, I actually, even if it's not anger, but you're just like, you know, something is like bothering you. People are like, just calm down. Like it's fine. And you're just like, I can't just calm down. Like, just don't tell me to calm down. I'm actually allowed to have my feelings, right? It's almost like dismissive when people tell you to calm down. You're like, yeah, I know.
Yes.
Yeah. I want to calm down, but also I'm allowed to have this like expressive feeling too. So yeah, it's just like being able to bring yourself back into that awareness where you can be like, okay, what triggered that? And, you know, why did I feel that way? Or maybe I'm just hangry and I need to go eat some food. But like having that moment to identify why you're feeling the way that you feel, I think is so big. And people, when we speak to other people, you know, it's the language of not, hey, calm down, but like, what's actually like wrong right now? Or like, do you need a minute? Like, do you need to just go and have a minute? Like, you don't need to go calm down. You don't need to take a breath. Just like, go sit in the bathroom, like by yourself if you need to. For me, it's like taking a shower. Just, I know my daughter's not in there with me. I know that no one else is in there with me. Like, that's a moment. And then also just like the crashing water is so cleansing and grounding as well. So that's one of the big things that like I do every day, just to sit in the shower. Like I'm done my work day. That's what my shower time is. I just sit in there and I just like, okay, before I go into like full mom mode. I mean, my daughter is normally home with me all the time, except for these 2 days where she's at forest school. And other than that, so it's like switching from work mode while I'm still momming and then like full-time mom and like wife mode, right? There's like that, I need that break before I can just go into the other thing when you're like just doing stuff all day long. It's just like exhausting.
Oh, it is, absolutely. And I kind of feel very passionately about moms being allowed to feel things. I feel like there's so much stigma around especially moms getting angry or having like really strong emotions, but especially anger. It's like so demonized. And I, of course, I see where it comes from because it's going to have a direct impact on your child. But I also don't think that the solution is what generations of moms before us have done, which is either like suppress it until it kind of explodes or, you know, I just don't think suppressing anger is a good thing. And I think that more than anything contributes to it coming out on your kids. So I feel like if we have these conversations about how anger is just telling you there's something happening in the moment that you're not okay with, right? It's just telling you that you are, like you said, hangry or you're tired, or maybe there's some other need of yours that hasn't been met, or maybe you had some bad news, or you had a bad dream, or you didn't sleep well, or something about that situation triggered you. You know, it could be something that brought up your childhood for you, or it could be just outside work pressure. There are so many reasons, human reasons, to be angry. So kind of if we separate the behavior and the emotion, but people kind of conflate it together and they say that everything about anger is wrong. And I kind of feel very passionately about that, because in spite of all the mindfulness and all, I'm still myself, you know. I'm still quite an up person, and my response is always, my voice will go up a couple of notches for anything, like even excitement. I don't tend to anxiety, I don't tend to feeling sad, but I do tend to feeling activated, charged up, excited, passionate. And then that also means on that spectrum there's anger. I feel like now, I don't feel like, my husband will tell you, my daughter will tell you, now with so many years of practice, I can come back down faster and I don't go as high up. And I'm never nasty in my anger. Like, I might get louder, but I'm not nasty. I'm not making mean comments. So when other people say, okay, you're still an angry person, I'm just like, yes, and I'm allowed to have these moments of anger. I'm trying to minimize the harm and I always repair. And that's, I think, where self-compassion is so beautiful, because when you come down, you just like, okay, what happened there? What happened? And what was my need that was not getting met? And then you give yourself that. And then you can go back and repair with your child. You can repair with your spouse. You can, like, human beings are resilient in that sense. As long as you're not being abusive, nasty, mean, harmful, or, you know, trying to wield power over someone in a negative way. I don't even think that, you know, just yelling, because it's vilified so much for women. I feel very passionately about saying this anywhere. Like, I don't think that just raising your voice is necessarily, I'm not saying it's a good thing, but I'm not saying it's like, it doesn't rank the same place that, you know, verbal or emotional or physical abuse does. It's just your voice going up, because your voice goes up when you're excited. Like, you're, the pitch of your voice or the tone of your voice goes up even when you're passionate and excited. So why is it wrong if you're angry, as long as you're not as long as, and I always say this because I never want to give people a reason to think abuse is justified in any way. But it's a complex topic, but I do feel strongly about it.
Yeah, no, and I agree. And it's like you've asked your kid to pick up her toys three times, and then on the fourth time, you raise your voice and people go, why are you shouting? Well, because I've already asked you three times to do something very kindly and very patiently, and now I'm tired of asking you for the fourth time, so I'm raising my voice to make sure you hear me. I'm clearly not being heard in my nice, exact, patient voice, so now I'm giving you my, like, a little bit of tuned voice that has a tone and it's raised
to get your attention.
Exactly. You know, like when I get frustrated, I don't raise my voice, but like I get a tone to my voice. I'm not a loud person, I would say, but I definitely have like a tone. Yeah. And so my husband will be like, why are you mad at me? Why are you this? And I'm like, I'm allowed to be frustrated and it can have nothing to do with you. Like, stop taking on my emotions. He's like a Cancer sign. So he like takes all emotions like in, and I'm not that person at all. But he like absorbs that. Like, he's such an empath, and I'm like, I can have feelings that have nothing to do with anything you've done. I'm allowed to feel frustrated and it can have literally nothing to do with you. I'm allowed to express that. And then, and I can say, like, I can even say to him, I'm just feeling really frustrated. Like, I had a long day. It was a frustrating day or whatever. And then still like later in the evening, like he'll be like, are you mad at me or whatever? And I'm like, I'm not mad at you. Like, I already told you a bunch of times. That is not you. We're allowed to be frustrated, people.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All emotions are just telling us something that we need to know about ourselves. And if we make friends with them, it's going to be so much easier that they don't reach that behavioral point where we start thinking they're a problem if we just make friends with them. And actually, you know, coming back to mindfulness, this was where body scans were really, really helpful for me. Because before that, I had no idea that our emotions express themselves through our internal body sensations. And that was such a game changer for me because I discovered so much about myself by just paying attention to things like that. It was amazing. It's why I kind of really, you know, tell people, start with the body, like start with the senses, start with the body. That's your body is where it is. And that's what mindfulness does, right? It takes you, it's called mindfulness, but it's like taking you out of your head and it's bringing you into the bodily experience of this present moment, whatever that may be, good or bad or whatever, you know. Neutral. It's just bringing you yours. So yeah.
Hey, podcast fam. Are you ready to crush your goals and manifest your dreams? Then listen up, because I've got a secret weapon to share with you. Happy Juice. Happy Juice isn't just any drink. It's a cortisol lowering, mood boosting elixir that supports your microbiome and enhances your gut brain connection. And let me tell you, it's a total game changer. With clinically proven results, like a 60% decrease in irritability, 55% decrease in anxiousness, and a whopping 211% increase in positive mood, Happy Juice is the key to unlocking your full potential. Plus, you can score a $10 off discount using the link in the show notes. So why wait? Click the link, grab your Happy Juice, and start manifesting your best life today. Trust me, your future self will thank you. And I find it, I guess, very funny that we have this culture of you're not allowed to do anything with emotions. But you know what? I don't find it funny, because this is like thousands of years, especially with women, of people telling us to sit down and shut up and to not make any noise, to not have an opinion, to not speak too loudly, to, you know, be seen enough, but to not really be seen. So we are feeling for thousands of years that we need to suppress who we are. And along with that is our emotions. And if you had emotions, they would send you to a crazy house. Like, they would put you in there and say that you were crazy instead of actually just being validated that you're allowed to have emotions. No, you need to go into some sort of mental health program, which they didn't call it back then. You know, you were going to like a sanitarium. So, I mean, that wasn't even that long ago. That was like 50 years ago that was happening, which is insane to me.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely insane. Oh, God forbid somebody has an emotion.
And I, you know, what I see is that, okay, so this, it doesn't happen anymore, but people self-police themselves now, because through generations of this happening, women just police themselves. The minute they yell, they think they're horrible. They think they're bad mothers. They think they're terrible spouses. And they won't, right? They won't for the longest time. They'll be suppressing it, suppressing it, suppressing it. And there's this whole pressure. There's the patriarchy. There's the being the good mother. There's the work pressures. There's all of these things. There's their own, you know, internal human mechanism. And then they'll be suppressing it and suppressing it and suppressing it. And then when they explode, then everyone's just like, oh my God. And then they're like, oh my God, I'm like the worst mom in the world. I'm like the worst parent in the world. But the thing is, if you were given the tools to express it and acknowledge it, see what it was telling you and let it process and pass through you, you wouldn't reach the stage where you were exploding all the time. Or you know, like I said, I'm never going to guarantee anyone's never going to yell again, but you'll yell better. You won't be so nasty. You'll yell less. You'll yell less louder. You'll come back faster. Like there are times when I'll raise my voice at my daughter and I'll catch myself. And then I'd be like, you know what? Let's start again. I'm sorry, but let's not do what you're doing right now and let's do something else. And I can say it immediately now. It used to be that it would happen after like 10 or 15 minutes and then I'd feel guilty. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you go into that spiral of anger and guilt and then feeling really bad and so bad that even now all your energy is like, oh my God, I'm so bad. Instead of it being like, I just had a human moment. A lot was happening. You're okay, Namisha. And let's go and like make it okay with that kid who's scared because you yelled. And then the more you do that, you catch yourself faster. Mm-hmm. And it's not like it's every time, but it's a lot more times to make an actual tangible difference in our lives. So I feel strongly about this, not suppressing and not demonizing any emotions, even when, you know, people want to be all high vibe and love and light. Like you reach that through the emotions. You don't reach there by bypassing the emotions.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to be able to feel what you're feeling and then release it. Like that's the healthy process because again, we're human. Like you have to feel your emotions, but it's again, that awareness of being like, why am I triggered? What about this situation is making me feel this way? Because so many of us after these thousands of years are in our healing era. And maybe people are like, oh yeah, your healing era, like you're solving your own trauma and stuff. It doesn't have to be trauma. Like you can grow up in a perfectly great household and not have any significant trauma and still be healing from the societal norms that have been put on us for these generations. And you know, it's not even our trauma. Sometimes it is. They've proven that you can pass trauma down generationally. Like they have it in brain. Like it's called epigenetics. So you can have no trauma in your life and still experience like limiting beliefs and stuff from your past generations. Like it's crazy, like to think that. But that's what we're healing from. You know, it's not necessarily a direct trauma. And also trauma, it doesn't need to be something huge and significant. It can be that you were bullied at school one day and your mind made up a belief about that. And that's a trauma because it made you think in a way that wasn't positive for you.
You were unsafe.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, that's what we're healing from. We're healing from all these things that have been put on us by other people. And the only way to heal is to actually feel and be aware of what you're doing. So to heal, you have to be mindful so that you can be in awareness, so that you can figure out why you feel that way and then heal that. It's just one of those things, is being able to look at yourself and say where.
I always think, you know, these situations, they tell us so much more about ourselves, really. And that's invaluable. And I think eventually, I was talking to one of my messaging coaches about this and I was like, eventually, I just want people through mindfulness to know that they are so worth getting to know. They are so worth sitting with themselves. And she was like, you know what? No one is going to get this. You please talk about anger and anxiety because you have to reach people through the things that are bothering them right now. I said, but if you think about it, that's where like it came from, right? Enlightenment, self-knowledge, that's what the ultimate aim of mindfulness is, right? It's this. Anyway, so I will not go on my high horse about that, but mindfulness really kind of helped me on the self-acceptance journey, and self-acceptance is like the most invaluable tool. So I hope that it's not even a tool. It's like, it's an invaluable place of being, I would say. I think a lot of people think this means that, okay, if I'm accepting myself, I'll just stuff my face with chocolate all day and grow into this fat slob. And actually, that's not what it is at all. It's just accepting yourself. And then that acceptance allows you to do the things that you want to do and to show up the way you want to show up. But you have to start with accepting. Like, you have to start where you are, like the saying says. So, yeah. So hopefully it will help, you know, talking about mindfulness in this way will kind of click something for someone. So I always put it wherever I can. You know, you are so, so worth sitting with. It is so worth it for you to spend 5 minutes with yourself. Like, you are worthy of this. So I don't know whether that's going to inspire people to practice mindfulness, but it kind of feels necessary to also say that to
people. Yeah, no, I 1,000% agree with that. I think we need to see how worthy we truly are. And if we want to achieve the goals that we really want to achieve, then we have to find that true worth. Not like, oh yeah, I'm worthy of this. Oh, I should go buy that because I'm worthy of it. It's like, no, it's like true inner self-worth where you speak your truth and you're 100% confident about that. And, you know, if someone questions it, you can say, you don't argue with them. You can just say, you know what? That's fine. You don't have to agree with me. I know who I am and this is what I believe and it's fine. Like, I don't need to prove a point to you, right? Because I think that's the thing too, is that people feel like they need to argue their point of who they are, but that's that you're seeking validation. You want somebody to agree with you. You're trying to change somebody's mind. And that's not self-worth either. It's being able to say, this is who I am, and I don't need to prove it to you. Like, I am worthy as who I am. And if you don't think that, if you don't agree, then you don't have to be in my life. You don't have to follow me. You don't have to, you know, whatever. Like,
exactly.
I think you get to that point where you're just like, this is who I am. And if you don't value that, then you don't have to be here. And that's okay. That's like, yeah, true self-worth.
And I also feel like people conflate self-worth with the things they do, in the sense that, you know, say you have these values, right? And you live up to your values. And that's like a wonderful thing. I'm never, ever going to say that's not a wonderful thing to do. But when we kind of predicate our self-worth on those things, say, for an example, I'm a minimalist, or I am someone who segregates my waste, or like whatever is your cause. Like, I'm an environmentalist, I'm really environmentally conscious, and I never use plastic. That's amazing. That's wonderful, right? You have this value and you're living up to it. But when we think that we are good people only because we do that thing, and many times people miss out this only. They think that they are good people because they are doing XYZ thing. And I used to do it all the time. Like, I'm a good person because I'm always kind to people, like outsiders. Like, I'm always kind. I always talk nicely to people. I always go out of my way to help people. And that's amazing, because kindness, generosity, integrity, these are deep-seated values of mine. But that's not why I'm a worthy person. I am a worthy person because I exist. And I think this is really radical for people to understand. And they're constantly like trying to find their self-worth in their values. And I don't see that people realize that they do separate things. Like, you're worthy because you're a human. You deserve every joy, every happiness, every good thing in life. You may or may not get it, because we, let's be real, live in this world, and you may or may not get it depending on your circumstances and where you are and what's happening. And you know this better than me, but like the limiting beliefs you have, the mindset you have, the internal work you've done or not done, the trauma you're carrying. But you are worthy just as you are of all the goodness that is there. And I kind of see that reaching that knowledge is like knowing that's where you're going to reach eventually with all the mindfulness practice. At least for me, that's why I feel like, for me, mindfulness and spirituality are very interwoven. But I don't necessarily want that to be a barrier for people when they learn mindfulness, because I feel like, take what you need wherever you are. Like, when I needed to have something calm down my anxiety and anger, then I just did breath focus meditation, and that was great for that period of life. And when I needed more, I got into the body and the self-compassion part. And then as I progressed on my journey, I came to the self-knowledge, self-worth, self-acceptance piece. And they're all beautiful parts of it. But I feel like it's like a, you know, it's like a bazaar. Like, come and take what you need from this. Like, you don't have to do what everyone else is doing. Just take the pieces of it that work for you in your life. That's like my approach to mindfulness, even in my membership, is to tell people, just take what you need where you are. Like, you can't do breath focus meditation, that's fine. Let's do belly breathing. You can't do belly breathing, that's fine. Let's do a body scan. You can't do a body scan, let's just do 5 senses. And I found that most people can do that, because it's just taking in information through the senses, unless they're like in a very, very overstimulated kind of space. Sometimes people feel overwhelmed taking in stimuli. And Self-compassion. Yeah, like self-compassion practices are also really important. But I kind of feel like that piece needs to be woven into our daily life even more than just, I don't know if you're aware of the loving kindness practice, the one where you say, may you be filled with loving kindness, may you be held with loving kindness, may you be happy, may you be healthy, may you be safe. So for me now, it kind of always, it calms me down even more than breathing. Because it's, I think it's just that association in my head of sending compassion and goodwill to someone kind of brings me to the space of very, very much a ventral, vagal, social connected space. I'll always take like this big, deep sigh of breath. But I've realized that it doesn't work for that way for people when they start. So with self-compassion, I feel like you need to start with like the really basic things. I'm thirsty. I drank some water. I'm being kind to myself. And like acknowledging that I'm being kind to myself. So, and then that self-kindness kind of, you know, it gradually builds up into self-acceptance and self-trust, self-worthy, you know, worthiness, self-knowledge. So, yeah.
Yes, for sure. And it's like, mindfulness, exactly. It's all about what works for you and what you need in that moment. And you might need this at one point in your life. And then it's like, okay, I actually feel like I don't really need that right now, but I'm feeling called towards this. And as you start to get really mindful and aware of why you're triggered by certain things and why you're feeling certain emotions and you learn more about yourself, then it's easier to have that compassion for yourself. Like it just becomes easier because you're like, oh, this is why I feel that way. It's not because I'm bad. It's not because it's wrong. It's because X, Y, Z. And then you're like, okay, well, I can actually, you know, forgive myself for that. Or I can say to myself, like, that's not your fault. Or, you know, it was never yours to take on in the first
place. Or you know, something as simple as, wow, that was so hard. I say this to myself a lot of times right now. I was just like, wow, that was hard. Namisha, that was hard. And I find myself softening. And, you know, I don't have to, then I'm not justifying everything. Like, oh, you know, this happened and then she said that and that. And I don't need to go into those stories because I can just be like, wow, mom said this and it triggered me. And that was hard for you to hear. And,
yeah,
you know, it's that easy. It becomes that simple to give us, you know, to give yourself compassion.
Yeah.
I also feel like, you know, mindfulness makes you aware of all the triggers, but it also makes you aware of the joy.
So
it makes you so much more aware of the joy. And especially if you're, you know, an empath or a highly sensitive person, people who identify with that, they feel like they're constantly overstimulated and they're constantly taking on people's emotions. But when you flip it and you learn those, you know, compassion comes in with built-in boundaries. I think people don't get this always, that, you know, compassion doesn't mean you're giving everything that you have away. You're kind of filling your cup, and your cup overflows and fills up other people's cup. It's not that you're going around filling other people's cups while you yourself are like completely depleted, which is like this upside down idea of mindfulness, compassion that we all have. So compassion is in itself inherently boundaried. And then I think when we reach that space, then that same heightened sensitivity to stimuli becomes a source of joy for you. Like, just like your kid's voice when they're screaming or fighting with each other is such a trigger for moms, but the same thing when they're playing, the same voices, right? They can become your glimmer. If you've heard of triggers and glimmers, they can become your glimmer because you're hearing those piping sweet voices and that laughter in the background. And I think the many people don't realize that you can find joy in these everyday moments. Like, mindfulness doesn't have to be all serious and going away into your room, or, you know, like going away on a retreat and doing it, or, you know, like a practice that you do, like an exercise in the gym alone. It can be these things. It can be like tuning into the good stuff, the stuff that you like. Like, I don't know, the smell of your car when it's freshly parked and you're sitting in it and the leather is light. Or, you know, the birds chirping when you didn't expect them to be, or the sun shining in a particular way. Like, I've realized that ever since I've kind of become more aware of this body-based, you know, gone into the senses, five senses mindfulness, I'm much, much more aware of these little things that really are that, you know, spark of joy to life. It's just that, just like you have this low level anxiety in modern life because of stress, you can have like this low level joy. It's not like I'm la 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 happy all the time or anything, but then I'm eating a morsel of food and I'm just like, oh my God, those flavors are so incredible. Like, that feels so amazing. And, you know, or you could just have had a great meal and you'd just be like, I have the sense of well-being. And I think that's where the body helps again, because we think that we need to, you know, be aware of our emotions in our body, and that can be your clenched jaw and it can be your racing heart and all of these things. But the good feelings also express themselves as sensations in your body. Like you can have this warmth in your heart and you can have this buzziness in your chest, and you can have, like, I got a lot of pricking in my nose because it's like, it's just before those happy tears come, my nose kind of starts prickling. And now that's become like a cue for, oh my God, Nimisha, you're really happy in this moment. And like for me, another big mission is to kind of make people use mindfulness to see the ordinary mundane moments of life, how much joy there is. Because I feel like that builds our capacity to deal with the hard stuff. There's always going to be hard stuff, right? But if we're building in this capacity all the time for joyful things that are happening, like you could be having a really bad day and then it rains and you can smell the earth, then you can be like, that's something beautiful that's happening in nature. And it can give you that spark of joy. Maybe your day would still be bad. You'd still have meetings. You'd still be stressed out and there's still work. But you have that one moment now to kind of hold on to as like the spark in a dark day.
Yeah. It's really just slowing down. When you were talking about like the sun in your face, like that's actually one of my, I have an anchor on my knuckle that I've anchored in. And that is like one of the feelings, because there's just like so much joy when you can just sit and have like the sun in your face and it just feels so good. And like typically when that's happening, you know, like you said, the birds are chirping, maybe there's like a slight breeze and it just feels nice. And so that's actually something I've anchored in into my knuckles, because I have a couple of anchors that I've talked about before in the podcast. But it's feelings, right? And when you were saying that you felt that in your nose, I'm like, you've anchored in that feeling into your nose, which is like, because you can create an anchor on purpose, yeah, or they're like accidental, like you get smells that you're anchored in and stuff. And yeah, so like, that's so funny that you anchored that into your nose. You could probably
actually, that
you could probably like tickle your nose and you would feel happiness. Like, I bet you it's anchored in there.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I should try it out. I should try it out and see. But you know, when you said smells, it just brought me to something, because that's such a great thing again. You know, with the 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, you don't always have a smell which you can easily access. Because come on, you could be sitting stressed at your laptop because you're trying to finish some work and there's no smell nearby which is obvious or evident. So usually I smell my fingers and it'll have that lingering, you know, the soap or the cream, hand cream that I've used. But what I tell people is that you could have essential oils, or you know, if you don't want to go the essential oil route, you could have spices in your kitchen that you could exactly do what you said with. You could anchor them to neutral or positive situations. And you know, again, like people would say, lavender is calming. Yes, it's calming for a lot of people, but if you had a really nasty teacher who wore a lavender perfume, it's not probably going to be calming for you. So I never like these generic, I mean, it's a good starting point, but if it doesn't work for you, and like I said, that's my whole approach to mindfulness. Everything is a good starting point. And if it doesn't work for you, like, question the approach and see where you can modify it. Don't start thinking there's something wrong with you, or, you know, give up on that approach, which could get you so many benefits just because that aspect of it isn't working for you. So I was just thinking, that's always like a great thing. I had this writing teacher actually, and she says that when she gets panic, she sometimes gets nightmares because of her PTSD. And she'll wake up in the night completely panicked, and then she'll go to her kitchen and take a spoonful of tahini and put it in her mouth and like have that whole spoonful, and it grounds her because it's like a very earthy taste. So you know, we with senses, we get to play in them, and kind of, you can't have the sun on demand, but you can, you know, with taste and with smell, you can have these little associations that you build up over a period of time, which can help you come back to the present moment when you're not so regulated.
Yeah, and that's like a perfect example, because, you know, as kids, like, you could probably think back to something in your childhood that smelled a certain way, and it brings you like right back to that memory. And for me, it's like Copper Tone sunscreen. So it's like a brand of sunscreen that we have here. And it has a very distinct smell. Like, no other sunscreen smells like it. And this, like, every time I would smell it, or like if you go to a park and there's like other kids wearing it, even now as an adult, it's not a brand that I recommend, but now that I know more about what we put into sunscreen, but you go to a park and you can smell that, and it just brings you, like me, right back to being at the park as a kid. And we get these anchors, could be like your mom's cooking, like, oh, that brings me back to like being a kid, right? And so we anchor things without even knowing we anchor them, but then we can do that on purpose too, which is so cool. So yeah, it's a really cool thing that you can do with your brain.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Was there anything else that you wanted to chat about mindfulness? Is there anything you were like, oh, I really wanted to say this?
Yeah, I did actually. I did want to bring up, since we were talking about how, since I just said like mindfulness, you know, if it's not working for people, what happens with mindfulness is if you practice it regularly, it's going to increase your awareness about everything, right? And so there are people who have had trauma, and a lot of us would have had some big T or little T trauma, at least if we've not had the big T ones. But there are some people, for whatever reason, where it really brings up stuff for them, like flashbacks, emotional flashbacks, memories, intrusive thoughts. And I think that's like a place where they're usually people who've practiced for a while and found benefit from it. And then they start having these really horrible side effects almost of the increased awareness. And I just wanted to speak to that, because I think that sometimes when we speak on these topics that are so globally positive, we leave out this section if we don't name it. So I just kind of wanted to name it, that I know that this happens. And it's actually why I'm doing a certification course on specifically trauma-sensitive and trauma-aware mindfulness, to be able to, you know, delve deeper into these situations and support people one-to-one through these situations, where they can find their way back to the good parts of mindfulness and overcome these, you know, these intrusive thoughts happening with like one of the techniques is actually developing positive anchors, like you said, with the sound and with the smell, even with, you know, distant sounds sometimes, because focusing inwards can be very, very activating for them. It can take them back to that place of trauma and bring up all those memories. So, you know, finding something in the external environment that they can anchor to. Some people meditate with a pet, because especially dogs will sense when their nervous system is kind of their owner is kind of going into dysregulation, and will come and nose them and nudge them into awareness. So I just wanted to really mention this, because I sometimes think that when we speak about all the positive things, nothing is ever universally positive. And I always like to make place for these other experiences that people may have had, because I would never want people to just throw away mindfulness. And a lot of them, you know, even if they stop practicing, it's not like the intrusive thoughts and the memories and the flashbacks and the nightmares, they go away. So then what now? Now, like, you've activated this awareness and you have to get back to your baseline functioning, and you don't need to suffer, right? And a lot of them do want the positive benefits of mindfulness as well. So I kind of just wanted to name that piece here. It's not something we can go into a lot of detail in. I just wanted to say, like, if there are people who are hearing this and have had this experience, like, I see you. I know this happens. It's completely valid. There are people who say that, you know, meditation and mindfulness is supposed to make you feel calm, but I end up feeling depressed after I do it. And those are all valid human experiences. Like, in my content, I kind of try to tell people these are all valid experiences, but we can find ways to work around them so that you have the benefits without these negative effects coming in. We can find ways to mitigate these effects, which is why I always talk about mindfulness that works for you, the techniques that work for you, the results that you want, and the ways that you can integrate it into your life if you're time strapped and, you know, don't have 1 hour to meditate every day on a sofa, not on the sofa, on a mat in some fancy retreat center. Yeah. So you can still have mindfulness that helps you.
Yeah, definitely. My husband actually has PTSD, so he would never sit and meditate. Like, that would be very not a good experience for him. And so, yeah, like, I get that as well. And my program is trauma informed, whatever the first one is, not like the deeper level, but so it's very much like everybody has their own experience, and show up as you are, and we'll release what we can and
reprogram what
we can. And yeah, no, it was so great chatting.
Yeah, I feel like that.
No, if you had something else to add, go ahead.
No, I was just saying that that's so great, because, you know, a lot of people don't have it. And then, especially in wellness spaces, we can, invalidate a large number of people unintentionally. Like, no one intends to do that to people, but you do. And then people don't want to speak up about it because of the shame. Like, what's wrong with me? Everyone else is having this great experience. Everyone else has these wonderful testimonials for this teacher. Like, what's wrong with me? But when you bring that trauma-informed piece in, like you do in your program, and like I aim to do in mine, I think we at least make space for the experiences. And I think that piece of validating people and saying, I see your experience and your experience is valid, I think that itself gives us space to start working with the experience instead of, you know, shutting it away. That's all.
Yeah. So it was really, really great connecting with you today. I think it was a great conversation, and it's really going to help women. So good. I will let you know when it's posted.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of the Intentional Manifestation Podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Sharing is caring, so be sure to share this episode with your friends, family, and anyone else who could benefit from a mindset upgrade. And hey, here's a little something special for our listeners. Head over to the episode note to find a link where you can get $10 off your next membership at the Highest Self Academy. Keep striving for your highest self, and until next time, take care.